Today we're going to learn more about topology and functions. So recall that in chapter 4, in an earlier lecture, we had a characterization of compact sets in terms of open covers. In section 2 of the present chapter, we learned a characterization of continuous functions in terms of inverse images of open sets. So it won't be too surprising that compact sets and continuous functions interact in a natural way. We explore this interaction in the current lecture. So, definition, let F be a function with domain E and let L be a subset of E. We define F of L to be the set of all F at X where X is in L. The set of F of L is called the image of L under F. The figure illustrates this idea. Theorem, the image of a compact set under a continuous function is also compact. So that's nice. Proof. Let f be a continuous function with domain E and let k be a subset of E that is compact. Our job is to show that f of k is compact. That is, the image of k is compact. Let script C, the set of all O sub alpha, be an open covering of fk. We want to show that there's a finite subcovering. Since f is continuous, we know that for each alpha, the set f inverse of O alpha is the intersection of E with an open set U alpha. Let script C hat be the set of all the U alphas. Since script C covers FK, by the way we picked it, it follows that C hat covers K. But K is compact, therefore there is a finite subcovering U alpha 1, U alpha 2 through U alpha M of K. But then it follows that F at U alpha 1 intersect E, F of U alpha 2 intersect E through F of U alpha M intersect E covers FK. Hence, O alpha 1 through O alpha m covers fk. We have taken an arbitrary open cover C for f of k and extracted from it a finite subcover, and that shows that f of k is compact. It is not the case that the continuous image of a closed set is closed. For instance, f of x is 1 over the quantity 1 plus x squared, and E equals R, the set E is closed, and f is continuous, but f at E is the half open, half closed interval 0, 1, open on the left, closed on the right. So that's not closed. It is also not the case that the continuous image of a bounded set is bounded. As an example, take f of x be equal 1 over x, and E is the open interval 0, 1, then E is bounded. F is continuous, but f at E is the open interval 1, comma infinity, which is unbounded. However, the combined properties of closedness and boundedness, that is, compactness, are preserved. So the continuous image of a closed set is not closed, the continuous image of a bounded set is not bounded necessarily, but the continuous image of a closed and bounded set is closed and bounded. That's the content of the preceding theorem. Corollary, let f be a continuous real-valued function with compact domain k in the reals, then there is a number l such that absolute value fx less than or equal to l for all x and k. So, a continuous function on a compact set is bounded. That's very useful and important information. Proof. We know from the theorem that fk is compact, so therefore fk is bounded because compact sets are closed and bounded. Thus, there is a number l, so that absolute t is less than or equal to l for all t and f of k, but that's just the assertion that we want to prove. In fact, we can prove an important strengthening of the corollary. Since fk is compact, it contains its supremum capital M and its infimum lowercase m. Therefore, there must be a number capital C in k, such that f of capital C is capital M, and a number lowercase c in k, such that f at lowercase c is lowercase m. In other words, f at little c is less than or equal to f at x is less than or equal to f at big C for all x and k. We summarize. Theorem. Let f be a continuous function on a compact set k in the reals, then there exists a number little c and a number big C in k such that f at little c is less than or equal to fx is less than or equal to f at big C for all x and k. We call little c an absolute minimum for f on k, and we call big C an absolute maximum for f on k. We call f of little c the absolute minimum value for f on k, and we call f of big C the absolute maximum value of f on k. Notice in the last theorem that the location of the absolute maximum and minimum need not be unique. For example, the function sine x on the compact interval 0, 4, pi has absolute minimums at 3 pi over 2 and 7 pi over 2. It has absolute maximums at pi over 2 and 5 pi over 2. Now we will define a refined type of continuity called uniform continuity. We shall learn that this new notion of continuous function comes up naturally for a continuous function on a compact set. It will also play an important role in our later studies of the integral. Definition. Let f be a function with domain E in the reals. We say that f is uniformly continuous on E if for each epsilon bigger than 0, there is a delta bigger than 0, such that whenever s and t are elements of E, then the absolute value of s minus t less than delta implies that the absolute value of f of s minus f of t is less than epsilon. You should notice that uniform continuity differs from ordinary continuity in that it treats all points of the domain simultaneously. The delta that is chosen is independent of the points s and t. It only depends on epsilon. This difference is highlighted by the next two examples. Example, suppose that a function f from the reals to the reals satisfies the condition absolute value fs minus ft is less than or equal to a constant times absolute value s minus t, where c is some positive constant. This is called a Lipschitz condition, and it arises frequently in analysis. Let epsilon be bigger than 0 and set delta equal epsilon divided by c. If x minus y in absolute value is less than delta, then by the equation that we just wrote down, absolute value fx minus fy is less than or equal to c times absolute value x minus y less than c times delta, which is c times epsilon over c, which is epsilon. So f is uniformly continuous. Because you see, we chose delta to be epsilon over c. It doesn't depend on x and y. Example. Consider the function f at x equals x squared. Fix a point p in the reals, p bigger than 0, and let epsilon be bigger than 0. In order to guarantee that fx minus fp in absolute value is less than epsilon, we must have for x bigger than 0, absolute x squared minus p squared less than epsilon, or x minus p in absolute value less than epsilon over x plus p. Since x will range over a neighborhood of p, we see that the required delta in the definition of continuity cannot be larger than epsilon over 2p, so the choice of delta, you see, depends on p. In fact, the choice absolute x minus p less than delta equal epsilon over 2p plus 1 will do the job. Put in slightly different words, let epsilon be 1. Then absolute value f of j plus 1 over j minus f at j is in fact bigger than epsilon equal 1 for every j. Thus, for this epsilon, we may not take delta to be 1 over j for any j. So no uniform delta exists. Thus, the choice of delta depends not only on epsilon, which is what we've always seen before, but also on p. In particular, f is not uniformly continuous. This is a quantitative reflection of the fact that the graph of f becomes steeper and steeper as the variable x moves to the right. Notice that the same calculation shows that the function f with restricted domain closed interval AB with a less than a bigger than 0 and b less than infinity is uniformly continuous. That is because when the function is restricted to the closed bounded interval AB, its slope does not become arbitrarily large. The figure illustrates what we're saying here. Now, the main result about uniform continuity is the following theorem. Let f be a continuous function with compact domain K, then f is uniformly continuous. So, this is very nice, an interaction of function theory with topology. A continuous function on a compact set is uniformly continuous. Proof. Pick epsilon bigger than 0. By the definition of continuity, there is for each point x and k a number delta sub x bigger than 0, such that if x minus t is less than delta x, then absolute f at t minus fx is less than epsilon over 2. The intervals I sub x equal x minus delta x over 2, x plus delta x over 2 form an open cover of k. Since k is compact, we may therefore extract a finite subcover, I sub x1 through I sub xm. Now let delta be the minimum of delta x1 over 2 through delta xm over 2, which is obviously a positive number, since it's the minimum of finitely many positive numbers. Let s and t be in k with absolute s minus t less than delta. So notice that we chose delta first, and then we chose s and t, so the choice of delta does not depend on our points s and t. then S is in I sub xj for some j between 1 and m, it follows that absolute S minus xj is less than delta xj over 2. And absolute t minus xj by the triangle inequality is less than or equal to absolute t minus s plus absolute s minus xj, which is less than delta plus delta xj over 2, but delta, of course, is the minimum of all delta xj's. So this is less than or equal to delta xj over 2 plus delta xj over 2 equals delta xj. Aha. So we know that then that absolute f at s minus f at t is less than or equal to absolute f at s minus fxj plus absolute fxj minus ft, but since each of s and t is within delta xj of xj, we may conclude that each of the terms on the right-hand side of the last line is less than epsilon over 2. So we have less than epsilon over 2 plus epsilon over 2 equal epsilon, and of course that's what we want. Once again, notice our choice of delta did not depend on s and t. In fact, we chose delta before we chose s and t. So f is uniformly continuous. So, question, where in the proof did compactness play a role? We define delta to be the minimum of delta x1 through delta xm. In order to guarantee that delta be positive, it is crucial that we be taking the minimum of finitely many positive numbers. So we needed a finite subcovering. That's where compactness comes in. Example, look at the function f at x is sine 1 over x on the domain 0 comma infinity, the open interval 0 comma infinity. Since this is the composition of continuous functions, it's continuous. However, it is not uniformly continuous since the absolute value of f of 1 over 2j pi minus f of 1 over 4j plus 1 pi over 2, f of 1 over 4j plus 1 pi over 2, is in absolute value always equal to 1. Thus, even though the arguments are becoming arbitrarily close together, the images of these arguments remain bounded apart. We conclude that f cannot be uniformly continuous. However, if f is considered as a function on any interval of the form closed interval AB with a positive and b less than infinity, then the preceding theorem tells us that the function is uniformly continuous because a continuous function on a compact set is uniformly continuous. As a little exercise, you can check that the function g of x, which is equal to x sine 1 over x if x is not 0 and 0 if x equals 0, is uniformly continuous on any interval of the form minus nn. And I'll give you a hint. It's continuous, and the interval minus nn is compact. So use the theorem. And here's a picture of the graph of that function that we just described. Next, we show that continuous functions preserve connectedness. So theorem, let f be a continuous function with domain and open interval I. Suppose that L is a connected subset of I that f and L is connected. Proof. Suppose to the contrary that there are open sets U and V such that U intersect FL is not empty, V intersect FL is not empty, and U intersect FL intersect V intersect L is empty, and finally F at L is U intersect FL union V intersect FL. Since F is continuous, F inverse U and F inverse V are open. They each have non-empty intersection with L since U intersect L and V intersect FL are not empty. By the definition of F inverse, they are disjoint. And since U union V contains FL, it follows by definition that F inverse U union F inverse V contains L. But this shows that L is disconnected, and that's a contradiction. And then we have some interesting consequences of this result. The first one is the intermediate value theorem. Let F be a continuous function whose domain contains the interval closed interval AB. Let gamma be a number that lies between FA and FB, then there is a number C between A and B, so that F at C equals gamma. So the picture shows very clearly what we're talking about here. So proof, the set AB is connected, therefore the F of the interval AB is connected, but F of the interval AB contains the points FA and FB. By connectivity, F of the interval AB must contain the interval that has FA and FB as its endpoints. In particular, F of the interval AB must contain any number gamma that lies between FA and FB. But this just says that there is a number C lying between A and B, so that F at C equals gamma. That's the result that we want to prove. And we'll conclude now with a rather dramatic example. Let F be a continuous function with domain the interval 0, 1, and range the interval 0, 1. These are both closed intervals 0, 1. We claim that f has a fixed point, that is a point p, such that f at p equals p. To see this, suppose not. Consider the function gx equals f at x minus x. Since f has no fixed points, f at 0 is bigger than 0, because f at 0 can't equal 0, so therefore g at 0 is bigger than 0. Also, f at 1 is less than 1, because f has no fixed points, and therefore g at 1 is less than 0. So g at 0 is bigger than 0, and g at 1 is less than 0. By the intermediate value theorem, it follows that there is a point p in between 0 and 1, at which g at p is 0, but that means that f at p equals p. This result in the early 20th century was generalized by Brouwer to any dimension, and that was considered a really dramatic result at the time. It used a lot of new ideas from algebraic topology. That's the end of today's lecture. Thank you for listening.